while often thought of as the world's factory, China's going through a transformation as it strives to move away from an export-based economy to a more consumption-based one. This transition isn't without its challenges, and policy actions could determine whether a downward trend in China's economic growth will continue into the future. Hi, I'm John Amricks, and welcome to Vanguard's Investment Commentary podcast series. In this month's episode, which we're recording on April 20th, 2017, we'll talk about our latest research paper, Navigating the Transition, China's Future at a Crossroads. Joining us today from our offices in Hong Kong is Chen Wang, Vanguard's Senior Economist for Asia and one of the paper's authors. Thanks for joining us today, Chen.
Thank you, John. I'm really happy to be here today.
So let's just jump right into it. So Vanguard recently released your paper on China's economic future. Can you discuss some of the themes of that paper?
After 30 years of impressive expansion, China growth has been slowing down quite sharply while financial risk is rising. During the past several years, China has often contributed to a sharp rise in global risk aversion. I think at this moment, there are two key questions in investors' minds. First, will there be a hard landing in China or a collapse of the financial system? Second, will China be able to successfully rebalance its growth model to a more sustainable one?
So let's start with this first idea around the transition in terms of a rebalancing of orientation away from a manufacturing and export-based economy into one that's based more on services and consumption. Can you talk a little bit about how that's happening and sort of what the implications are?
Well, I think if you look at the China slowdown, right, the reasons for the slowdown is quite complicated. It's both cyclical, secular, and structural. And the secular and structural problem cannot be cured by the cyclical policies such as monetary and fiscal easing. On the supply side, we do see the potential growth of China has been falling down. You know, the labor force is shrinking, the population is aging rapidly, and the catch-up effect is quickly fading.
I'm just going to jump in on you real quick to see if maybe you can go back and explain that sort of catch-up effect for us. What do you mean by the catch-up effect?
Well, you know, as emerging market, right, when your GDP per capita level is low, then you can easily see faster growth when you get the investment from other countries, the technology transfer from other countries based on your comparative advantages such as cheap labor. Then in that case, actually, the growth can be very fast. But when your wealth level, you know, GDP per capita reach to a certain level, then you become a middle income country, then the growth will gradually slow down.
I see. That's really an interesting idea as it contrasts with the long term sort of story about China, that it's all been about it being an emerging economy, really driven by cheap labor and just the adoption of existing technology. I think what you guys seem to be saying and writing about in the paper is that that's changing a bit. And that now that China's getting closer to that sort of middle income level, they're going to have to think about how to continue their progress in a very different way.
You know, China was called the world factory. A key reason is because 30 years ago, China has a huge supply of labor, cheap labor. And that's why a lot of factory was moving into China. But now, because of the demographic cycle, I would say the era of cheap labor in China is actually drawing to a close. So the competitiveness of China as an export hub or the world factory is no longer there. So then in that case, you have to think about where else is the driver for China's growth.
So that's where the service aspect and turning more internally to consumption-based sources of growth might be headed, right? So what does that look like?
Well, we look at the growth part of China. I mean, in the past, exports and investment has been the two key driver for the Chinese economy growth. Now, after the great financial crisis, what happened is that, well, the export sector is already shrinking. But on the other hand, because of the 4 trillion fiscal package, the investment growth was really accelerating. So what we have seen is that the credit field and investment-led growth model has become increasingly unsustainable. Investment has been risen to nearly 50% of GDP, and non-financial sector debt has risen more than 100 percentage points of GDP in 10 years. In particular, the investment has been mostly concentrated in the heavy manufacturing sector and also the real estate sector. Then we have to find a new growth driver in some other areas. So I think the question here is that when investment is slowing down more sharply, can service and consumption really pick up to offset the slowdown in investment?
And I think that leads right into this sort of next question here, which is around the scenarios that you mentioned covering in the paper. So which of those four, the smooth rebalancing, sort of hard landing, a Japanese-style stagnation, or emerging market, sort of classic emerging market instability, what do you think we're more headed to in China?
At this moment, we still think that the smooth rebalancing scenario is probably the most likely. To achieve the smooth rebalancing, we really need the government to provide enough macro policy cushion to avoid a hard landing, and we also need them to push forward a timely and effective structural reform to revive the productivity and also the potential growth in the long term. Then we also see the risk is that if the government becomes overly protective, then they provide too much macro policy cushion, but instead they didn't really push forward the structural reforms in a timely manner, then we could end up in a Japan-style stagnation. Mm-hmm. There is also another scenario called hard landing. It's like what happened in the late 90s in China. They have to push forward the structural reforms, so, you know, no pain, no gain. You suffer, but then you find the way out. The least likely scenario is the emerging market's instability, which means we didn't have the structural reform, so we end up with no new growth model.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And it's important, I think, for people to hear, too, that we refer to that as a hard landing and not a crash. And as you've mentioned, you know, it's happened before in the past. So again, the sort of dire scenario is very unlikely. Maybe I can get you to talk a little bit more about the government and the tools that they have available. You mentioned that the toolbox in China is pretty deep. You talked a little bit about the SOEs, the state-owned enterprises. But what type of tools does the Chinese government have at its disposal to try to deal with and manage this process of transition?
Well, I think that's exactly why we are advising our clients, say, not to panic about China in the near term. You don't worry too much about a hard landing in the near term because China has abundant policy tools to cushion the economic slowdown. You know, so we look at the monetary policy, fiscal policy, and regulatory tools. Other than that, in term, we also have reforms. We can reduce the tax and fees burden for corporations. So in case if there is a sharper slowdown in the private sector, the government can definitely come out and provide that kind of necessary cushion to avoid an economic hard landing.
In your research, you state that it's not China's level of debt, but rather the pace and concentration which are worrisome. So why is that?
If you look at the level of the debt in China, well, first, it's similar to those in the developed market. And second, China is really able to support a relatively high leverage level given its large gross national savings. But I think on the other hand, it's really that the high level of leverage was accumulated in a very short period. And the concentration of the debt is in the corporate sector, especially in those unproductive state sector. That is somewhat concerning. So it's not just that debt level is high, it's also that those debts are not efficient.
Very interesting. Okay, let's start to bring this back towards how is this relevant to Vanguard investors, institutions, individuals, and the other clients that we serve. Folks just have a lot of concern about China being able to return to and continue to achieve over long periods of time sustained and healthy growth. Why should this matter to investors? Why should they care? Why should they be concerned?
Well, the first thing I think is that China matters to the world. Right? I mean, China is the world's second largest economy and deeply intertwined in the global market. So China right now is a very important contributor to the global economic growth. And if China slows down, there will be spillover effect in trade and GDP. So the impact to the rest of the world really depends on which scenario will happen, right? So we do see that if China slows down more significantly, it will affect the neighboring countries, especially like in Asia, and also commodity exporters such as Brazil and Australia. And also, I think the slowdown process of China matters for the global inflation pressure, matters for the exchange rate for many other emerging market countries, and most importantly affects the confidence the investor sentiment in the global financial market.
Chen, what advice would you give to investors as they think about the risks that you've discussed and the possibilities that we've talked about today, as those investors think about how to build their portfolios?
Well, I would say if you want to invest in China, I think the important thing is remember stay long term. China is the world's second largest economy. They have the third largest bond market and second largest equity market in the world. So this is a very important part of the global economy and the financial market that you cannot afford to miss. So investing in China basically offer the investor the exposure to a growing share of world GDP, and it captures the associated diversification benefit in a global portfolio, regardless of future growth scenario. So stay long-term. Remember, China is still an emerging market, so it does have volatility. Mm-hmm. So don't panic.
No, I think that's a great way to think about it. Thank you. Last question. What would China's capital outflow mean to the global markets over the long term?
In the short term, they have been tightening up the capital control because capital outflow can destabilize the financial system. So that is more of a near-term thing. But from a long-term perspective, capital account liberalization is an effective way to help China more effectively allocate the capital, both onshore and offshore. So I would say in the future, when China liberalizes the capital account more and more, we will see rising outward investment as domestic corporates and households aim to diversify their investment portfolios. So this will have significant implications for the global market.
That's been very helpful, some great insight. Thank you so much, Chen.
Thank you. Thank you, John, for the great questions.
And thanks to our audience today for joining us on this Vanguard Investment Commentary. To learn more about the issues we discussed today, please check our website and take a look at our new paper, Navigating the Transition, China's Future at a Crossroads. And be sure to check back with us each month for more insights into the markets and investing. Remember, you can always follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks to all for listening.
All investing is subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. International investing involves additional risks, including currency fluctuations and the potential for adverse developments in specific countries or regions. These risks are especially high in emerging markets. Diversification does not ensure a profit or protect against a loss. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Vanguard's written permission. Copyright 2017, The Vanguard Group Incorporated, all rights reserved.